97.5 The Fanatic.
A pleasant Sunday morning to all of you out there. D-Line, I'm with you here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Be with you until noon. The NBA is in phase two of a six-phase process, I call this. Well, it's been mapped out. I didn't call it. The next part is this week they will start their mandatory individual workouts at their training facilities in their respective cities, and they will continue doing their testing every other day. Currently, they have had 16 who have tested positive out of 302, a pretty good workable number, and so we'll hope that as they go along, that number gets even less and you have no new cases. But to talk about the schedule, which was released on Friday for the Sixers and the entire league, and what we can expect or hope for when everybody heads to the bubble in Orlando in a short amount of time between the 7th and 11th of July, is Coach Lynam with us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Coach, what's going on this morning?
Top of the morning to you, D. You're on this early shift.
Yes, thanks to my good friend Joe Stazak so that I can attend a family affair, I'm calling it, later this afternoon.
Good for you.
Yes. All right, so the schedule comes out, and the Sixers have what they are perceiving as the second easiest, and I know they do that by records of the teams. They will open up with the Indiana Pacers on August 1st, the first of eight of their seeding schedule is what they're calling that. What should fans expect in these eight games, and what do you think the Sixers need to get out of those eight games before heading into the postseason play?
Yeah, your first thought, what to expect. D, I'm not sure. This is going to be, obviously, you were making a reference. I heard you earlier talking about the soccer. I think it's going to be different, not just for fans watching, but for the coaches and players who are actually, you know, down there on the court and on the sidelines. And I think that those who are able to adjust early on will get a big advantage. And I think that's what these eight games are about, to somehow reestablish that, you know, this is not summer ball, you know, running up and down in a Disney gym. I know it's a seeding process, but I think those who can, like, turn the channel is my phrase, be ready to, like, adjust to this so that when the playoffs start eight games later, you're ready to go and you somehow mentally are prepared that this is NBA basketball. I think that's going to be the Sixers and really the league's challenge.
So then you would be with me in that from a mental focus standpoint, as a team, as a group, as an individual, whichever way you want to say it, you cannot look at this as if they are preseason games. They are not, because what's at stake when you stop playing those eight is far greater than the first of 82 when you come out of a preseason normally.
Yeah, I think the parallel can be made. This is like the end stretch of a season where you're kind of jockeying for position. And obviously the Sixers, I think, in sixth place right now with a realistic chance of jumping to four. You know, that's normal for a team to be in that situation with eight games to go in a regular season. But I think you have to be a bit careful to be on cruise control. And in the Sixers' case, you were talking about the personnel and an eight-man rotation. Those kind of decisions are going to be huge. You're going to have to see, like, what guys are in game shape as you go forward. I don't mean you have to be in top game shape when they start scrimmaging the end of the week, let's say. But when the playoffs start, obviously, you have to have your guys, number one, who you know are ready, and you have to have a sense of how big is the group that we're going to rely upon, whether it's an eight or a nine-man rotation.
If you had to choose who those guys would be, well, first you'd have to tell me who you'd want as the starting lineup, and then if you were doing a gut, you know, knee-jerk reaction of who you think that nine, we'll go with nine, would be for him right now, what would you do there? First, who would you start? We know four of them, but the biggest thing is, would you have Horford in the starting lineup or no?
No, I wouldn't. But that's, I was there back at the beginning of the season. You know, I was not as big a fan. It has nothing to do with Al Horford, by the way. I love Al Horford.
Yes.
It's about fit. I just don't see him being the best fit for the other four people that the Sixers are going to roll out there.
All right, so we'll put
back up to Joel, obviously.
Yes.
But as you said, that if Brett's anywhere near able to pull it off, if you're going to have him be playing 38 minutes, the game's 48 minutes, at least 10 minutes of Al out there without the presence of Joel.
Right. All right. So we'll put Horford on the bench for now. Who would you then put in the starting lineup with those other four?
I think my two choices would come. I like Matisse Thybulle anytime he was out there with that starting group. I think he brings a lot of intangibles, and there's no question he's a top defensive player. He makes things happen at the defensive end of the court, and this team's at their best when they're playing, you know, that high-level defense. And despite the fact that it's not as big a random sample as I would like, I don't think you can throw out what Jake Milton did. I know you're a fan from going all the way back watching him in the G League. Forget that, like how many minutes he averaged when you look at the overall stats. Look at what he did when he was in the starting lineup. And I'm going to say that was for a pretty good stretch of games.
Sure.
So my choice would be between those two. But again, that's just from the sideline.
And in either case there, and really as this group as a team, you know, those are young guys. So you're going to ask young guys to be mature and learn quickly what playoff experience gives others, you know, that hopefully they could adapt to those situations.
Yeah, no question that experience is a big deal, but I always go back to it. The first thing is the level and quality of the player. If you go back and look at the history of the really great players, you know, they don't even blink. They go from end of season to playoffs. If they're on a good team, let's go.
Let's
and they
go.
Perform basically at the same or in some cases, even higher levels.
Sure.
So if these two guys are what I think they are, meaning Thybulle and Milton, they'll be ready to go, but playoff exposure and experience notwithstanding.
All right, so my one thought, if you are going to be a team that gets to the conference finals and maybe even possibly the finals, in my opinion, where it begins and ends for the Sixers is that Joel Embiid must be for his team what LeBron is to the Lakers, what Kawhi is to the Clippers, and go on down the line. Would you agree with that?
Sure, I would. I think the reason very possibly you could make the case that they weren't there last year, losing a very, very tough series to the eventual NBA champ, Toronto Raptors, was because Joe's play was so erratic. Now, I think there were obvious reasons for that. He wasn't himself.
Sure.
But to be within striking distance that they obviously were, you know, losing on that shot at the end, or otherwise they're in overtime in game seven. I think, you know, a normal Joel Embiid, I would have liked their chances. So I think, yeah, I think your premise is well taken. If you aspire to win the whole thing, you know, your top guy, he's got to lead the show.
Will we see Brett Brown use Ben Simmons? And I thought he did it a little more towards the end of, you know, the season before it all shut down in a screener roller, be that role at the offensive end. Do you think we'll see a little more of Ben in that situation?
Yeah, I think that's possible, but I don't draw the distinction between that happens when Ben and the Sixers are playing half-court basketball.
Got you.
And I think that's going to be one of the key factors here for teams who are going to be successful. Are you going to be able to get your guys and your team back into an up-and-down, fast-paced mode? That's whether the fans like it or not, the Sixers and their coach, Brett Brown, they like to play fast. And conditioning is a huge part of that. So with this turn on now, flipping the switch, are you going to be able to get your guys in condition? For Joel Embiid to want to play 38 minutes, if Brett's on target with that, and a fast pace, and, you know, this stretch of inactivity, which for everybody it has been, that whole, you know, you put all that into the formula, that's not an automatic answer popping out.
If I had to ask you who you think will win it all in this unique setting, with this unique layoff, do you have an answer?
I think I would. I don't have a confident answer. You know, the obvious two teams, the Lakers out west, the Milwaukee Bucks were far and away the best team in the East, although I think they're beatable. But I'd go with the chalk, I think, and probably say the Lakers. But I would just put a little asterisk there. Losing Avery Bradley
is a big deal.
It's a hit.
Yep.
Yeah, I think your guy, he's not a star player. They're going to go, obviously, on the back of LeBron James and Anthony Davis, if, in fact, they're going to win it all. But a guy who's been a very steadying influence as a point guard player when you don't want LeBron having the ball all game, that's a big hit not having him.
Just because you did bring up the Bucks and you said beatable, you always thought the Sixers actually matched up well and thought that they could guard a Giannis. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I would give the Sixers a good chance against the Bucks. Not only in terms of team defense, but they have a lot of guys individually who have a chance of guarding Giannis. Joel guards him some, obviously Ben guards him some, and Al Horford is a good matchup with Giannis. There are very, very few teams out there that can throw that type of an array of individual defenders at Giannis with a reasonable chance of keeping him under some semblance of control.
I'm looking forward to it. I think this is going to be fun to watch, to be honest with you.
Oh, it's going to be great. I mean, we'll have to, as will the players, have to adjust to the fact that it's, in a summer high school-like gymnasium.
Sure.
But the fact of the matter, as I said, I mean, I'm not trying to be poetic here. It's a sign of the times we're in. I mean, you might be looking at Game 7 of an NBA final series being played in Fantasyland at Disney World. I mean, give me a break.
I didn't think of it like that, but that's so true. With nobody watching except in their living rooms.
How about it?
Coach, I appreciate the time always. I hope you have a pleasant Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a hot one out there.
Yeah, the same for you, and appreciate the talk.
Yeah, thanks for getting up early for us. We appreciate
it. All right, buddy.
All right, take care. Coach Lineham with us on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. I saw your eyeballs, Connor, light up because he had Matisse Thybulle in the starting lineup. Hey, you know what? When he said it, I might go that way now. But you got to be committed. If you go that way, you're not, like, if Matisse makes a rookie mistake, you can't be, taking the leash and yanking him. You got to be committed. And I do like what he says, what he does defensively. I don't think any of us would argue. And for, him from a coaching standpoint, he's saying defensively is where their bread is buttered. And if that makes you your best out of the gate, I say go with it then.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thought process for Matisse is just, if you're going to see rust, especially shooting the basketball, size doesn't slump. The Sixers are still going to be the same heights and weights as they were. Well, weights relatively, but same heights as they were heading into the quarantine. But if you're going to try and just shut someone down defensively, maybe waste a quarter and hopefully you could play a little bit of a low-scoring game because of some rust. You put Matisse out there and lock someone down.
I'm looking at Matisse's his shooting numbers. So we know, from two-point range, he shot 50%. His overall field goal percentage was 41%. But he had brought his three-point shooting up. I don't know if you remember the one game, I think he made six threes. So his three-point shooting had actually risen to 35%. But what he does in terms of steals, causing havoc, block shots, his athleticism, length, I would like to, and now that he says it, I would like that addition when you have a Josh Richardson and a Ben Simmons already. You have Embiid as your rim protector. Tobias is your weakest link at that point defensively. And
That's not a bad weak link to have. That's your worst defender,
right? I won't be sad if they go that direction. But again, you know, is the Sixers as an organization, can they see that the Al Horford role needs adjustment? And I don't know if they have seen that. So I think we'll know very early on. But again, he made a great point. If you're going to try to have Embiid play 38, you can't have Al just be 10 minutes out there as a backup five. It's going to be something different than that. But that's for them to figure out. All right, that was fun stuff. Gets you kind of excited when he pointed out how Game 7 could have such a...
Yeah.
Right?
And you think back to some of the great, like, late NBA Finals moments and what it would be like with no crowd noise or fan reaction or anything like that. It's just...
Even remember how they'll hold up the trophy.
Right, yeah. What do you...
The celebration at the end. And there's none of that.
No, LeBron just screaming Cleveland to an empty stadium in Orlando. Not that he's
exactly
with the Cavs anymore, but come on. Yeah, some of these moments are going to be funny looking.
By the way, they pointed out this morning, so LeBron's 35, and that was the age of when Jordan won his last title. The average age of the Lakers, they're the oldest in the league, 30. And LeBron could be going for his third finals MVP with a third different team. To which then quickly Jalen Rose responded that Kawhi is doing the same, meaning not the same number of championships, but the third finals MVP, because he did it with San Antonio and he did it last year with Toronto, and now he would be trying to do it with the Clippers. Interestingly enough, somebody had said, just like Coach Lynam pointed out, how Avery Bradley, who is not going to go to the bubble because of this is his time of where he has visitation rights to his son. And, you know, that's making a family choice that I think we all would respect. But that's a hit from a talent standpoint and a key role for the Lakers. I had seen where somebody had texted or emailed, you know, is Lou Williams playing with the Clippers? I believe you had to tell your team by the 24th, and I think today is the 27th. Yeah, so on Friday, you had to tell your team if you weren't participating. I didn't see anywhere where Lou said he wasn't going, and that was originally because he had been part of the conversation with Kyrie Irving about, you know, you don't want this stuff to be a distraction from what we're trying to accomplish in creating equality and getting rid of these social injustices. He was part of that conversation, but I don't believe that he is not going with the Clippers, because I would say that would be equally a hit for the Clippers, like Bradley, if not greater. I don't know. I'd have to look statistically. What I know what Lou does for the Clippers. So I do believe that he will be playing with Kawhi and company. So that was just something that was a question on a Twitter or text. Yeah, Twitter text to me. But that would be a big hit. But I think with it, right now, in terms of who's going, has been established. Now moving forward, it's only, you know, whether anybody tests positive or that, you know, an injury. So, yeah, we shall see. It's going to be fun. All right, I was also telling you about a documentary of Lance Armstrong, which is a two-parter on ESPN, and it's a 30 for 30. First, you forget the dominance this man had in the sport. Now, I know everybody knows in hindsight there was doping going on with him and everybody in that sport. I think that was the other thing that was so amazing, is that the sport had... This was so out of control for this sport forever. But anyhow, after he had cancer, he won all seven consecutive. And the conversations about what was going on, who he was with his teammates, how nobody would sign him after his chemo treatments. As you mentioned, what did you say when you see him? He's not Did you say not likable?
When I've seen the clips from the documentary and clips I've seen really since the incidents with doping and everything, he just doesn't come across as a very likable person to me.
Right. So I would say to you, as I'm watching you, there are times that you have complete admiration for the commitment to winning. Not unlike what you saw in Jordan in The Last Dance. And it makes you understand that when people have that kind of mindset, and there's not a lot of them to this degree, where they don't care what anybody else thinks. They don't care how many friends they end up with at the end of it all. And he treated his treatment of cancer like a competition. And he treated the cancer is who I got to beat. And it was a scoreboard. I mean, he mapped it out. And that's how he also, if you were a teammate of his and you did him wrong in any way, shape, or form, you were done. And even to this day, he has not made amends with some because he just doesn't think some of it was right on their part. It was a very fascinating, he got sued by, the question by the reporter was, who sued you? He said, who didn't? And, so he definitely paid for his mistakes for sure. But if you want to get a feel for, and I know there's some reporters in there who, this guy lied so good, saying he hadn't done anything, and it was believable. So to have him sit here, they don't believe any of it, but he hits it head on. The questions are right at him, and he doesn't dodge them.
Yeah, and I can totally respect that, being able to answer, especially on such a large scale, such a big platform. Yes. It is respectable. You made the likening to Michael Jordan. Like, yeah, Jordan can be that way because he won 6 and there was never allegations of him cheating somehow. When you act like you're the ultimate competitor, and then we find out regardless of, and I know you said to me previously,
sport.
Yeah, everyone was
the
doping.
Whole sport.
But still, you can't be holier than thou when you're testing positive for PEDs. Like, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth when you say you're that competitive.
Right.
If you're really, Jordan would be in the gym trying to get better than those guys without cheating. I firmly believe that. So,
well if this guy in terms of his training was ridiculous, and he actually prior to cancer, I remember him saying like, I can't believe I how hard I've trained and I'm not getting where I want to go. And there was a doctor who basically, Ferrari's his last name, and once the two shall meet, but he was training all the people who were winning. And then it's just everybody. So even the guy who ratted him out, he was doing him too, Floyd Landis, who was actually from this area, which is why I was glad I watched it, because I remember having to do stories related to Floyd Landis when I was still at Comcast Sportsnet, and this brought it all back, and also to see where his life went after, because he was considered, at that time you were bringing down an icon, and he was the one who sent the emails and basically told them everything that not just Armstrong but even himself, Landis, right, who won it the next year, what they all were doing, and he just mapped it all out for them. So it was very compelling TV. And as I say, it's the summer of documentaries, so I highly recommend that one if you don't have a chance. And even if you don't like the guy, you will find, similar to what we're going to see tonight, the backstory. You will find the backstory of all of this very, very interesting. And honestly, you'll laugh some too, because he's that, his straightforwardness in this, and knowing what he was not a nice guy, and he admits it. You'll have a little bit of appreciation as somebody who's just gotten older and now having to live with what he did. So It's interesting. 610-632-0975. So of the 8 games that the Sixers will play, I put out that they cannot lose. We didn't ask the coach that. I said you can't lose more than 3. I think just from a standpoint of going into the postseason in the right way. What do you think is an acceptable 8-game record for the Philadelphia 76ers? And who needs to come out of that regular season 8-game schedule looking the best for you? What's the key for you as they then jump to the postseason? 610-632-0975. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to 97.5 The Fanatic. I am Dee Lynam. I'm with you till noon today. I have to correct myself. So Avery Bradley of the Lakers is not participating in the restart because his oldest son has trouble recovering from respiratory illnesses. And so he probably wouldn't have been able to go into the bubble. And he and his wife have 3 kids, and this is his 6-year-old is the oldest. So his is a personal decision. It was Trevor Ariza who's made the decision of Portland Trailblazers because it is conflicting with the visitation time that he has with his son. So I just wanted to make that clarification on both making personal decisions, but for different reasons. And I confused the two. All right. We did have it's still out there, a Twitter poll question. Connor, tell us, give the people the question first and where are we right now? And maybe even some responses.
All right. Thanks, Dee. So our Twitter poll available at 975thefanatic.com or 975thefanatic on Twitter, rather. Our question is, looking at the Sixers' 8 regular season games, and I listed out who they're playing. It's Indiana, the Spurs, the
Wizards.
Washington Wizards, Magic, Trailblazers, Suns, Raptors, and Rockets. How many wins do you expect for the team during that stretch? The options are 2 wins or less, 3-4 wins, 5-6 wins, or more than 6 wins. Right now, leading the way by a wide margin, at 55% of the vote is sitting at 5-6 wins. Second place at 23% of the vote, we're looking at more than 6 wins. 17% are saying 3-4 wins. And in last place is 2 wins or less, measly 4.2% down there. So we've got 78%, more than 3/4 of our responders.
Won at least 5.
Yeah, 5 or more. And we're looking at about 500 votes right now.
All right, good.
But our responses, though, we have a couple responses. Not happy responses there.
Let me hear.
All right, our first one comes from Delco Pete, who says, this team cannot win away from home. Doesn't matter if there are no fans. Plus, they're really not that good. I'm sure Embiid will sit out 4 games for load management, and Ben will not take any jump shots. Stick a fork in them. So, very very optimistic there from Delco Pete. And we also have one from Eric Stewart, who's also a little bit negative, saying, even with the easiest, and I know it's actually the second easiest 8-game schedule, Sixers have the worst road record in the league. With Browns, and that's Brett Brown's poor leadership and strategy for talent or game management. Definitely don't see them winning more than 2 games, possibly becoming an 8th seed in the playoffs.
No. Oh, my goodness.
No chance.
Come on.
Come on, guys. We need some optimism.
Yeah, right. Actually, speaking of being a bad road team is accurate, though they're not becoming a road team by going to Orlando. That becomes a neutral site. So, I will say their road record was 10-24. If I ask you to play Kendrick Perkins, which I had from yesterday, and he has the sentiment kind of what those two Twitter response is, not maybe not to the same degree, but he has similar sentiments. Play for the people, please.
Are you serious? The team that has been the biggest disappointment this season, the team that has battled with chemistry issues, has identity crisis. The Philadelphia 76ers, listen, they need these eight games like old people need soft shoes. Here you go. You talking about the 76ers. Before the season started, listen, everybody said, oh, the Sixers are going to be this, they're going to be that. They signed Al Horford, and they had nothing but problems over there. So coming into this bubble, they have to be prepared because the 76ers are a contender team at home, but on the road, which they'll be playing on a neutral site during the regular season, they have been a lottery team. So they have to find themselves. They have to come together. The health of Ben Simmons is a major concern. The health of Joel Embiid is a major concern. And can Brett Brown get these guys to buy into the system and put these guys in position to be successful? You had Al Horford in and out of the starting lineup, so they have some serious issues over there. So these eight games are very important to the Philadelphia 76ers.
I actually enjoyed his passion for saying, in a nutshell, look, they got to get it together and get it together fast. I mean, that's basically, and that's what the sentiment of the people on Twitter were saying, who now two wins to me seems a little low, no matter what. And that person who says he'll miss four for load management, I have every reason of understanding why somebody would say that because of the way they have used load management with Joel Embiid. So it's until they show us differently that some will have a different belief. But I'm saying if he intends to use them for 38 minutes a game in the postseason and his coach has said this, then load management is not going to be part of the eight games. Maybe you take a day off when you have the one back-to-back situation, which is August 11th and 12th. Maybe you sit one of those if necessary. But to me, if you're healthy, you know, you got to be ready to go for all eight, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that, Connor.
No, I totally agree. Even if he doesn't play all eight, he's got to have that ability. He's got to have that stamina to be able to play eight games after having these 3 months or change off.
Yes.
Like, what are we saying about, I mean, he's this franchise. You can say what you want about Ben Simmons. Joel Embiid is the face of the Sixers franchise right now.
Yes, they are.
If you plan for him to be that for a long time and you want to have a championship window, eight games cannot tire your best player out. You've listed LeBron, you've listed Kawhi. Playoffs are grueling. You got to play series. This isn't the NFL where you get one game and if you win it, you're good. You have to show up. And as much as I disagree with him, the sentiment that he's going to be sitting four games for load management in an important eight game stretch.
No way.
There's no chance, but still I get, like you said, why people feel that way because yeah. In the past he's had trouble with it.
Yep. Absolutely. So with the NBA this week, one of the things we may start to learn, so July 1st, next week's the 4th and 5th, so Wednesday, I think, is when mandatory individual workouts will happen. I am anticipating, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm anticipating that we'll get something out of Sixers camp. You know, I'm sure you're not allowing media in there. That's obvious. And by the way, in case people don't know, part of the conversation I had with Keith Pompey yesterday is how will media be covering the bubble? And his understanding is that about 10 people will be allowed and they will reserve those for national media people, however they make those decisions of who they are. And then the others, and those 10 are actually part of the bubble with all of the same protocols, necessary testing, stay in there, quarantine, the whole thing. Then there will be a tier that might go down to Florida, will be watching in the building, but not down with the people who are in the bubble, be up high somewhere in a room, probably a press box. And I said, well, what would be the advantage of that? And he said, well, because the how you will get your post-game comments from players is going to be through a, for lack of a better word, because I know there's multiple, but Zoom setting, and there will be a moderator. And if you are in the second Pier, which is you have now gone to Florida and you are watching the games from in the building, but you aren't in the bubble, you're guaranteed to be able to ask at least three questions of the people. Otherwise, you're at the mercy of the moderator. If you're on the Zoom call, say a Keith Pompey who covers the Sixers but doesn't go down there because, you know, it's a very expensive endeavor and it's long. Now, you know, the moderator can say, okay, Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer, what is your question? But that is the differentiation of how this is all going to be covered. Now, us as fans, you're going to get plenty because they're going to be televised games. And you're going to have that part of the national television contract. I mean, contract. By the way, you know, the Sixers didn't get a whole lot of love on the national, like a Celtics have six national games. They put the six highest televised games on a graphic yesterday. And the Sixers didn't make the cut of the top six of those 22 teams. Washington got the least. I think they have one. Shocking. But you would think, you know, the Sixers just don't have that cachet that we think they should have for a national appeal. They got to do something about that. 610-632-0975. So what is the 8-game record that you need from the Philadelphia 76ers? Or in addition to the record, if you have something that you must see from them coming out of those 8 games, what will that be? And when you look at the schedule, the hardest 2 games are the last two, Toronto and Houston. But I would say maybe the most important game is the first, because it would allow you to flip-flop your place in the standings with Indiana and instantly move into 5th place with 7 still to play. And now you're chasing 4, which wouldn't be a bad thing either, even from a mental standpoint, to be in the top 4. Prove that you belong to be top 4 in the East before the playoffs even start. 610-632-0975. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
It is Sunday, June 28th. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic. I am Dee Lynam with you until noon today. And then Joe Stazak will be in noon to 4. And then Mr. Rob Motti from 4 to 8. We've been talking a lot about the NBA and the restart. They are currently in phase 2. And this week, we can look forward to at least hearing information about mandatory workouts that will go into effect on July 1st. They can have as many as 8 players in the building at one time, though no group workouts allowed. And the head coach is now allowed to be there as well. So this is the new phase that the teams will move to this week. And they're continuing their testing every other day, and on July 7th, anytime between the 7th and the 11th, all of these teams will make their way to Orlando and then be in their respective hotels and begin their training camps in Orlando, all leading up to the July 30th start to the NBA season. But we're going to go to the phone and check in with Evan, who wants to talk about college sports returning. Evan, how are you today? Thanks for calling.
Hey, good, D. We spoke yesterday. Wanted to give you a quick update. I don't want to take you too far off topic with the Sixers and the
NBA.
No,
it's fine.
I thought it was
fine.
Some interesting information.
Yes.
So we talked about how quickly things can change from day to day. So a little background information. We mentioned, I spoke about my daughter yesterday. She plays volleyball in New York.
Yep.
Exactly. So we found out today that her first, now background information, in the pre-conference schedule, which obviously a lot of D1 and all programs have before they go to the conference schedule, they play a non-conference schedule. In volleyball, the way it works is they'll have, you know, three teams or four teams come to one central site. They can play like a round robin type scenario and get a bunch of matches in over the course of a weekend. So the first tournament that she was supposed to have coming up was for the weekend of August 28th. It was going to be hosted in Michigan, and it was going to be her school, Michigan, Miami, and Utah.
Okay.
That's been canceled.
Right. Too many different states, probably, and probably quarantining necessary, so that's out.
Exactly. So it just kind of goes to show you. Now, they're supposed to have the following weekend or the weekend after that, they're supposed to be at Harvard, and a couple other different schools are going to come there as well. So Coach sent a message today saying, hey, that's been officially canceled. Have no updates as far as when we can return back. School returns back officially the end of August, but as far as sports are concerned, we have no idea. Just FYI, this one's officially canceled. So, yeah, I think people coming from all over the country, people having to fly in, like their school, we're going to drive to Michigan, but people having to fly from Utah and from Miami to play. You know, again, it's not a major sport, a major income generator like football and basketball are, but
all of those things are becoming, I mean, they will have to be addressed by these fall college sports and those athletic departments. I mean, are you willing to put your football team on a plane? You know, that's the biggest thing. That's for starters to me. And the other thing is everybody going back to campus? Because I know if you don't bring people back to campus, you can't have the sports.
Right.
So,
well, yeah, and as we spoke about, not to belabor the point, but, you know, she's got friends on the team that are coming from California, that are coming from Texas, that are coming from Michigan, coming from all over the country. And that's just one small school out of 300 and some odd that play that particular sport in Division I volleyball. And they're all coming from all over the place. In fact, they even have some coming from overseas. And I don't even know if they'll be allowed to come back at any given point. So,
And I don't think we know what is the available testing for every college. So depending on how much money do your college has, does that determine how much testing you're able to do? Or, you know, is testing for the student athletes the same as what we're seeing the NBA's testing every other day now, test every day down in Orlando? I mean, that's a lot of testing that has to be done if you take it to the same level and the number of student athletes that you're dealing with across the country.
Yeah, and I would wonder if that's kind of more of an NCAA guideline that they'll have to provide. How do you say, well, the Pac-12, because of their funding, gets a lot of testing?
Yeah, I don't know.
Their teams can play, but the Patriot League or the MAC conference or some other conference doesn't have the money, therefore they can't test, therefore they can't play. So they're eliminated from competition for that sport. It just doesn't seem fair.
No, I don't. I haven't seen a lot of write-up with the NCAA. I hear more things just locally because of people like you and my friends who have children who are student-athletes as well. That's basically where I get any of the information. I don't see quite the headlines of the NCAA, unless we saw where, you know, Clemson, LSU, those two teams had a lot of people test positive with their football teams that had gone back to workouts.
Right.
Yeah, so. All right, well, keep me posted, Evan.
Thanks, Dee.
I appreciate it. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Thanks for calling 97.5 The Fanatic. It's complicated. Really complicated. So we keep saying how the Sixers, just to go back to the NBA and in this short minute, I'm also going to check in with someone on the NHL, see if we're any closer to hub cities. But one of the things we keep saying, how they have the second easiest, the first and easiest of schedules when they get to the bubble is for the Pelicans. But what I find so interesting is that Miami had 8 games remaining in their 82-game schedule against the 8 teams that didn't get sent, didn't get invited to the bubble. And they've replaced that with, let me tell you, they have a difficult schedule. I can see why. It's not perfect. And we knew somebody was going to get the short end of the stick. So Jimmy Butler's crew is one of those. They play Boston, Denver, Indiana twice, Milwaukee, OKC, Toronto, and Phoenix.
Such a shame. My heart breaks for the Miami Heat. I'm so Sorry.
Right. The thing that I'll say, they're not slipping lower than six, I don't think. That would be my knee-jerk reaction to that. But that is not an easy schedule. But it might fine-tune them better than others in terms of getting ready for the bubble. So that was one thing. There actually is a really good article in today's Inquirer that puts together 10 things you should know about the restart. And so, you know, I said to myself, well, I think I know most of the things. But he has some really good little nuggets, if you will, about things that I did not. That was one of them that I did not know about going into the bubble. There's others who have played. How many people have played in this Disney gym in their past, whether with their AAU or college, of having played there. So, and obviously the Sixers, they hit on the fact that the Sixers were 29-2 at home and 10-24 on the road. And, you know, they have to correct that. 610-632-0975. Let's take this quick call from Reed and then we'll take our break. Reed, how are you? Thanks for joining us from Charlotte.
Wow. Hey, thank you, D. It was quick.
No problem.
So, first of all, I found it funny how you call your dad Coach Lynam on the line. I appreciate that.
Well, I'm
surprised you didn't let a daddy slip in there.
Nah, in real life, I call him Big Jimmy, but...
Oh, Big Jimmy? Got a family event you're taking off for. I wondered if he's going to be there. I was like, oh, they're going to see each other this afternoon.
Yep.
All right, so Sixers. So, I completely agree with him with Thybul. We keep talking about this rookie, you know, he's a rookie, and veterans make mistakes. You know what I mean? It's all about how you can play.
Sure.
You know, we've seen, I'm not comparing him to Magic Johnson at all, but, you know, Magic Johnson won finals MVP as a rookie.
Exactly.
You know, so, I mean, if you can play, you can play in the NBA. He's played, you know, 60 games already, and he was improving. You know,
he was
improving his shot, and you know, he overplays on defense a little bit, commits a couple fouls that, you know, that are ticky-tacky, but you can play through those. Those are effort plays.
Yep.
You know, you can live with those mistakes.
I agree with you.
So, I think he needs to be in a starting lineup, and Milton needs to be in a rotation. You know what I mean?
I like both those ideas. I'll do that.
Yeah.
I had Shake in the lineup, but I'll switch it for Matisse. That's no problem.
Yeah, well, Matisse is bigger, and
he'll be better defense.
Yep,
and I like putting your emphasis on the defensive end. How many of the eight games do they have to win?
I think with the schedule, I think 6-2 would be a pretty good mark. I would be okay with 5-3.
Okay,
and I don't think the seeding. You know, I don't think the seeding really matters. 4 or 5. I think 4 or 5 matters because. Like your dad, I think we match up with Milwaukee.
Yeah.
That's in a neutral site.
Yep.
They feed up their crowd so much with their shooting. You know, when you're playing ball and you got the crowd, you know, roaring on your side and you're hitting threes, I mean, they can hit 6 threes in a row and the game be over. So they won't have that. So.
Yeah. I do know that he liked that matchup better. So I say move on up, have that. 4-5-1 because it would show improvement, and 2, that shows that you're prepared to go down whatever road it is. You know, mm-hmm. Toronto wasn't a piece of cake last year, and they end up being the championships and winner of the championship, and you took them to a game 7.
Exactly. And my last point.
Yes.
Why isn't anyone saying anything about what the league is trying to do to Memphis?
I know.
I mean, first of all, they're 3.5 ahead.
Yep.
So they got to be 4 ahead in order to not play in a play-in, you know, playoff. I mean, like they are seriously screwing Memphis. Like I know Zion. They want to get Zion or Dame Lillard in the playoffs, but they haven't earned it. And what they're doing is they're going to make Memphis finish 4 games ahead, or else they got to play in a play-in tournament. Like nobody's talking about that.
I'm going to talk about that on the other side. I got to take a commercial break, but that's a great point, Reed. Have a great rest of your day.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. 610-632-0975. All right, we will get back to – don't let me forget about that, Connor. I want to get to the Memphis part. But on the other side, we're going to talk to Colby Cohen, who's the Flyers pregame, postgame analyst on NBC Sports Philadelphia. And I just want to check in on the NHL because they're behind the NBA, but I don't want to forget that they too have a restart happening and what that means for the Flyers in particular, who were red hot, having won 9 of 10 before Gary Bettman and company had to hit the pause button. You're listening to 97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.